It's still very early to define success for MOOCs. And another thing that I've noticed is that people tend to talk about them as if they're one thing, but they are changing so rapidly that even the ones that we are offering now are different in their structure and approach from ones we offered in the fall. The success rate is going to depend on both the goals of the course and the goals of the learner.
That's Lynn O'Brien, Director of Academic Technology and Instructional Services at Duke University. She's one of many academics that believe MOOCs are indicative of a larger trend toward networked learning and more options for lifelong learning. Massive open online courses, or MOOCs, have been through the hype cycle since early 2012 for an unprecedented collection of potential disruptions to higher education, including global access, low cost, alternate credentialing, data collection, and analytics. Amy Collier is Director of Digital Learning Initiatives at Stanford University. She says the social technologies that are widely available to people around the world have connected us in ways that we've never experienced before.
Not only can we get information to people, but we can actually have them interact with other people around the world on that content. We can have meaningful interactions with people who we'll never see and at scales that we've never been able to have before. And that's both about access, that more and more parts of the globe now have access to online technologies, and the social nature of them. And I think that allowing people online to be more creators than just content recipients and information recipients has been a shift that's helped kind of the growth of these online learning movements.
But some faculty have been wary of the MOOC concept. Some feel that it could further commodify higher education and damage what traditional higher education has to offer.
I've seen some people fearful. And because they're fearful, they don't want to explore what the options are. They say things like, well, this is just a big way to get brand recognition or name recognition. It's a big marketing ploy.
Alan Gyorke, Chief Academic Technology Officer for the University of Miami.
I don't believe in the doom and gloom that it's going to eliminate higher education. If it wasn't for higher education, these online courses wouldn't be possible. I mean, that's where the people who produce them work and live.
So I think there are ways in which a nuanced experience, a very cognitively rich experience, can be offered by MOOCs that go beyond what you'll be reading about them in the mainstream educational media.
Gardner Campbell is Director of Professional Development and Innovative Initiatives at Virginia Tech.
And I think that because of an entrepreneurial spirit that is also informed by some really deeply imaginative producers, we're likely to see some really interesting things happen.
Well, one of the things it's forcing us to do is to be much more explicit about our assumptions and then to see whether we really have anything to back them up. I'll see people say things like, well, you know, you can't really have a good interpersonal experience in anything but a face-to-face class. And then I'll hear someone else say, are you sure? Do you know that? How do you know that? Have you ever been in an online class? Have you tried doing it this way? Have you tried doing it that way? And all of a sudden people are saying, well, maybe we don't really know as much as we think we know.
Well, at some level, I think MOOCs are a response to the lack of experimentation in higher education around digital learning.
George Siemens is Associate Director of the Technology Enhanced Knowledge Research Institute at Athabasca University. He's also widely recognized as one of the progenitors of MOOCs.
There were some early attempts with Fathom and other initiatives to really ramp up higher education, digital opportunities or online learning. Now, unfortunately, at that stage, the technology wasn't there. The literacy to participate in online learning wasn't there on the part of many learners, the bandwidth, and the list goes on. But any kind of failure in the space of experimentation still produces some capacity. So you have systems, let's say, like Penn State, that have been very active in the online learning space for quite a long time. And as a result of their high level of activity, they actually enter the space of teaching MOOCs, as they're doing now with Coursera, with a very strong learning design focus. They invest significant effort in the experience of students, and they take a team-based approach with the faculty experts and learning designers to try and flesh out their particular course content or their course activities. So that end, I think MOOCs will, at minimum, produce a level of capacity. Even where the initiatives fail, they'll provide some insight and understanding on the part of faculty that have taught them or part of systems that have tried to offer them.
The MOOCs are driving conversations about teaching and learning that are more intense and more in-depth than I've seen in decades. So I'm very excited about that. I don't think MOOCs will be the same in 5 years as the way they are right now. Instead, what they will probably do is change in their own structure and also change some of the things that we do on our campus-based classes.
If you get the right person in front of the camera, and that person has a deep passion for sharing something that's very important to them as an intellectual and as a teacher, that's going to communicate really, really well. And I think that we're going to be surprised by the depth and intensity of personal engagement that will be possible in these MOOCs.
I think MOOCs are going to change again what faculty do, but I think that's a continuous process. It's my hope that faculty will focus less on lecturing, because that's not really teaching and learning, that's content. Just like books haven't replaced, libraries haven't replaced faculty, it changes the nature of what faculty are. So I would hope that faculty would see these as resources that they can use in their own class and then spend more of the time on active learning.
Why can't MOOCs coexist with more traditional forms of higher ed? And that one gets really complicated for me, because traditional forms of higher ed, I think, are not looking at the deepest mission of higher ed very well. And I think MOOCs are going to disrupt a lot of what we're doing now, having to do with credit hours, with departments, with disciplines even. And those things should be disrupted. But along the way, if traditional, let's say, higher ed can get in touch with its deepest values and begin to recover the spirit of optimism about human possibility that really brought universities together in the first place, and if we can be nimble at reinventing the way we consider what we do as institutions, then I think we might have a really interesting higher ed landscape to look at, in which we might be able to see massive faculty entrepreneurialism, which really is what led to MOOCs. I hope that when the disruption does its work, that we will see some nimble, agile reinvention that nevertheless recalls the earliest part of the optimism about human possibilities that universities have really been founded on.
If you'd like to find out more about MOOCs, join our content sprint at www.educause.edu/sprint2013. This podcast featured Gardner Campbell, Len O'Brien, Alan Gyorke, Amy Collier, and George Siemens. Thanks for listening.